Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Kieran McCarthy, engineer and house builder, expert advisor too on cheap Irish homes, is on TV, is our in our Cork studio today. He's answering your questions about retrofitting and renovations. I hope you're comfortable there in Cork, are you, Kieran?
Yes, Claire, thank you very much.
Good, because you've got a lot of questions to answer for us.
Let's go
straight into them. We have one here. This listener, two listeners, Anne and Frank, say they have a bungalow. It's well insulated. The attic temperature is about 4 degrees. And they want to know, should we put spray-on insulation directly under the roof tiles as well? So what do you say?
Well, like typically your attic should be cool, because in the old days we'd warm attics, but that's because all the heat was going from our house up through the first floor ceiling into the attic. So you should have a cold attic. That's a good sign. That's generally a sign that your house is warm. I mean, typically you would put 300 mil, maybe 400 mil of a quilt insulation in your attic. I wouldn't be for spraying the rafters, because then you've two layers of insulation and you're basically only trying to keep a little bit of heat in your attic. I mean, nowadays you just tend to lag all your tanks and lag all your pipes and leave the attic be cold and make sure it's ventilated. So
they just don't need that then?
No, I'd just put more insulation on your attic floor if you feel the house isn't warm enough. But I mean, that's where I'd leave it, you know.
All right, Trina is in Cork and says, I'm living in a 20-year-old semi-detached house. I have two bay windows and they're always cold and they've condensation on them. Where should I put the insulation, and will replacing the windows with triple glazing do anything, or is double glazing enough?
A-rated double glazing is a very good product. Now, you tend to have a U value down as low as 1.2, which is very good. I mean, you can get an A rating in your house with A-rated double glaze. So I wouldn't be rushing to the triple glaze. In bay windows, you have tricky details because you have a little mini roof over the bay window, and that can often be poorly insulated. So I'd probably take down the plasterboard there, or a section of it, and make sure that is properly insulated. And if it isn't, just re-insulated. It's not a huge thing to do. And you might find the reveals of your windows weren't properly insulated as well. That's another area. And certainly make sure you have air tightness tape around your new windows as they go in, to make sure you don't have drafts around the windows.
So it sounds as though she might not need new windows going in there, but she does need some professional help to take a look at what's going on around the window.
Yeah, certainly not triple glazed windows, and I wouldn't be rushing to that straight away.
Okay, you know. What professional does she need to engage there, Kieran?
It's either a good carpenter or a good engineer, or even a BER assessor. But I'd start with a carpenter, a well-qualified and experienced carpenter. Get him to open up. He'll know what areas to look for. Get him to open up a few little triad holes to make sure you're not leaking air, to make sure you have insulation where you should have. I'm insulating a bay window at the moment myself, and it was the ceiling was the issue. There wasn't enough insulation in the ceiling. So the ceiling could very well be the issue. And of course, that's where you lose all your warm air up to a ceiling anyway. You know.
All right, so start with a good carpenter to investigate what's going on, Trina. Liz is in Mallow, staying in Cork, and has a Georgian house. And she says the upstairs northeastern bedroom is damp. The walls get condensation every night. And she wants to know, what should she do regard dry lining the room? Someone suggested 4x1s and tongue and groove.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing that anyway. But like a northeastern elevation of a house will be the coldest, because it gets next to no sun, really. So the dampness is cold bridging on the walls. It's condensation. It's the moisture-laden air hitting cold walls. So I would dry line it, but you need to hold your dry lining back off the wall by, you know, about 75, 100 mil to allow to ventilate the gap in between. And now you could put on, you know, 75, 100 mil of dry lining board inside that, standing in a metal track, but make sure you ventilate that cavity.
Now we're going to County Down and to Jessica, right up the other end of the country. Jessica says, we live in a 100-year-old plus cottage which has a BER rating of E. In the medium to long term, we want to do a full renovation and an extension, but we'd like to carry out some work in the short term to improve the comfort of our small home. We do have loft insulation, but there seems to be little insulation elsewhere. What are the things we should consider doing now that we won't need to rip out and redo in a full renovation? In the long term, we would aspire to have an A-rated home. Now she goes on, we have been considering external insulation, underfloor insulation, replacing the very drafty external doors, and she wants to know, could we reuse the external insulation if and when it's removed for an eventual extension? So I suppose the thrust of this, Kieran, is what sort of interim measures can Jessica take?
Yeah, to be honest, nearly everything you do will be at risk when you go down to do what appears to be a deep retrofit later on. And doing the floors is a major job. So it would be reasonably effective, but it's a major job. So I probably wouldn't be doing that because, you know, your design will change and your floors will change and your services will change in the floors. So I wouldn't be doing the floors. I wouldn't be doing external insulation at all in a stone building because if you do, you're locking all the moisture. Stone walls need to breathe, external stone walls, and you'd be locking all the moisture in because generally with external insulation, you have an acrylic render which doesn't breathe. You need a lime render on external on stone walls. The windows maybe airtight. If you're happy with where the window locations are, if the windows aren't good enough, you could replace them. If they are good enough, make sure you have air tightness tape around the windows. I'd look for some low hanging fruit, like any drafts that are like in around service pipes that are coming in and out of the house at the moment. Anyway, they could be fixed, and look, they'll have you done later on. But I mean, they can certainly be fixed now. So I do think that nearly anything you do will be at risk, and because I just think you'll if you're getting into a major project, there'll be such design change. What you do now will be likely abortive. So I wouldn't be spending a whole lot of money now, and I'd probably be saving it for later. Mm-hmm. It's not probably the ideal answer to the question, but I think it's probably the most prudent way to go. You know,
extra jumpers and a bit of tape.
Yeah, air tightness tape and expanding foam, filling any gaps and cracks around doors and windows and services is probably your best bet.
All right, and hold off till you do the big job, Jessica. Brian is in Mayo. I'm in the early stages of renovating an old farmhouse in Mayo. The building is very old and looks to have had some form of extension, possibly concrete block or poured concrete walls. We'll have to wait to see once the demolition work begins to know for sure. But two walls are thick rubble or stone walls. I'm trying to figure out how to prevent moisture coming up from these walls if I insulate and dry line the interior. Will some form of plastic vapour barrier be required? And what's the best practice for dry lining concrete walls or stone rubble walls?
Well, the process is, with a stone rubber wall, you'll have to hold back from the rubber wall, as we said earlier on, to ventilate the cavity. And you'd probably have to do something similar, really, with the block on flat or poured concrete walls, because you'll have a dew point on the outside of the insulation, and you need to be able to ventilate that. There are two real ways of preventing water ingress from the floor up, or from the ground up in a stone wall. There's a product you can get pumped in by specialists, and there's a kind of electrolysis type scenario where it migrates horizontally across the stone. That's a specialist product, and there are various companies in Ireland who specialise in dampness who will inject that product. The other option is it's a PVC type egg crate product you can push against the wall, which allows the dampness to continue, but it keeps it away from the interface of the house. You'd have that up maybe 1.2, 1.5, depending on what the what's advised and the level of dampness. That's slightly less effective, but it works if you're not going down the full road of doing all the pumping works from the specialist contractor.
All right, Brian, and I hope that helps. Now, Kieran, I want to go to this one from Susan, who, like many people, is considering solar panels. And Susan has a three-storey timber frame end of terrace house with a flat roof. I was told, she says, they will be ballasted, not fixed. What are the considerations in regards to weight? Can any roof take this, and how can I verify if it's okay?
Well, generally they would be ballasted because on a flat roof you can't fix down to the flat roof because the roof will leak. So they are ballasted. The best thing to do is get an engineer. I got them in my own house. They're ballasted with concrete blocks, believe it or not. Now it's all done fairly cosmetically correctly and all that, but they're ballasted with literally concrete blocks. So I would get an engineer to do an assessment of your roof, and he can talk to the photovoltaic company as well, and he can get a sense of what level of weight they're putting on, and he'll do assessment to make sure your roof will take it. But you need to do that because if an old roof and it might only be 6x2s or something, you know, that's a fair bit of weight to be adding onto a roof like that, and assuming that they're in good condition in the first place.
All right, so you need to check all that out, but it is doable.
It is doable, certainly, yeah.
Now, Paul lives in a bungalow that was built about 50 years ago. The building has suspended timber floors with approximately an 85 centimetre gap, if you can imagine that, from the floorboards to the ground, and a 65 centimetre space below the floor joists, but enough room to crawl about. This space is ventilated to the outside. The base floor is just gravel on top of the soil and can be quite damp. Paul wants to know, what are the ways to insulate this floor? Is there any danger of decay in the timber floor as a result of the insulation? And we had a lot of questions in that vein, Kieran, people wondering how to do this.
Okay, there's two ways of doing this primarily. In the olden days, like 15, 20 years ago, what people used to do was put chicken wire between the joists and put quilt insulation between the joists. And you still leave enough air passage, so you're kind of ventilating the timbers, which is the key issue here, to make sure they don't rot. People aren't really designing houses now anymore with suspended timber floors because they are lovely to walk on and they worked in the past, but with levels of air tightness people are looking for now for heating systems and ventilation systems, they don't work because you're adding a ventilated cavity below your floor. So what I've done in renovating several houses, including my own, is I took the whole lot out. Now, this is a deep retrofit and a big price tag and everything else, but I took the whole lot out and I brought up layers of hardcore and what have you, and I put in a radon membrane and put in, you know, 150 mil of solid insulation, underfloor insulation, and you can put in your underfloor heating then because you have a new concrete slab going in. Now, it is a deep retrofit type approach, but it gets rid of all your air tightness issues, gets rid of all your ventilation issues, gets rid of all your insulation issues, and now you have the facility to put in underfloor heating as well.
But if you can't do that for budgetary reasons or whatever else might be at play,
yeah,
is the chicken wire option still available
to
people?
Yeah, it is. Oh, it is, yeah. I mean, you can buy all those products still, yeah. So, I mean, you're taking off the floorboards, you're putting the chicken wire, or people use kind of build the banding you get with concrete blocks as well, you can get that. And they use that, or there's various other products, they use that and they put the insulation, that holds the insulation between the joists, and then they can reinstate the floor.
But the gold standard is the one that you just described earlier, right?
Yeah, yep.
All right. James in Meath, our two-storey house built in 2004 has a lean-to, which extends out the kitchen area at the side of the house. Our main attic was insulated by the builder, but the roof space over the lean-to had no insulation. 3 years ago, we asked an insulation company to lay a second layer of fibreglass in the main attic over the two-storey part, which is a great success and keeps the heat in upstairs. We asked them to put in a trap door in the kitchen ceiling and lay insulation in the lean-to roof, but this hasn't had any noticeable effect and our kitchen area is still cold. What are your recommendations?
I'm kind of imagining the cross-section there, and it's probably kind of a triangular cross section, so you mightn't be able to get insulation the whole way down and still kind of ventilate the eaves and what have you. So if that isn't working, what you could do is take out the quilt insulation and either spray or fit rigid insulation between the sloping roof rafters at the higher level, and even maybe put another layer of insulation underneath them, you know, tied up again so you don't have cold bridging or whatever. It'll cost a little bit more, but I mean, that is a fail-safe way of doing it.
Yeah, because there's nothing worse than having the one cold room. You know, every time you walk into the kitchen, you feel the blast.
And it's the one room you use most anyway, you know.
Exactly, so yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that sounds very fixable. You say there it's going to cost a little bit, but it's tricky, worth doing.
Like, there isn't a fortune material to go into it, but it's a slow, tricky work for a tradesman to work in there, you know.
Now, mould. We recently had our attic and walls insulated and we have noticed mould appearing in the corner of the ceiling and the wall in a bedroom and also in the conservatory, which is open to the kitchen. We didn't have this problem before. Could it have something to do with the insulation, Kieran?
I'd say it probably has something to do with lack of insulation in pockets. Like, I've seen this issue before, and when you insulate the attic, of course the hardest part, like we just said earlier on, is to insulate in around the corners and the edges and whatever. So what you might find is most of the ceiling is well insulated and there might be a square foot missing here and there right down towards the eaves, and which is why you're getting localised condensation and mould there. So I'd send someone up there and check right down into the eaves and make sure that you aren't missing little gaps here and there, because that's why you're getting, I would have thought, why you're getting this localisation.
So they'll have to get the people back who did the insulating in the first place to have a look and see if there are any gaps. This person wants to clad the house with external insulation and render. The end wall joins our neighbour's garden and they're concerned about us narrowing their space. What's the thinnest cladding available that would still be effective?
Probably 80 mil. I've used from 100 up to 140. So generally, you're well north of 100. But you can get, look, you can get it very narrow. But I mean, I wouldn't be using anything less than 80 mil because I think the effectiveness will start to taper out then. You know,
still works though at 80 mil. Does it?
Oh, it does. Yeah, yeah. And like external insulation is great because your dew point is on the outside, so you don't have any condensation requirements, like we said earlier on, with the dry lining where you have to ventilate the cavity. You know, so it is a great product.
Okay, Valerie says we're looking at retrofitting our home. We have a conservatory with the roof off the kitchen dining area. This area gets very cold very quickly once the heat is off. Here we are again. Mm. We've considered changing the conservatory, replacing the window sections with walls. Is it possible and would it be worthwhile? And she tells us that the garden is south facing.
Yeah, well, look, it sounds like a great place to have a conservatory, given that it's south facing. No, I suppose like with conservatories, if it's all glass, it's probably roasting in the summer and probably freezing in the winter. I think if you start changing the glass to walls, you're ending up building a new extension sunroom because the foundations are probably going there to take glass, so they wouldn't be anything great. So there's probably loads of little mini issues because it was probably only kind of put together in a semi kind of a DIY fashion day one back in the 80s or early 90s or something. So I'd say if we're going down to start replacing it, I'd nearly just, you know, get a price for getting a proper job done and get it well insulated. Because look, as you get older and you use these things an awful lot more, kind of heading into retirement, and all, cause they're a lovely place to, you know, for family events and reading and all that kind of thing, connecting to the garden, particularly when you're south facing. So if you can at all, I'd be just, you know, spend a little bit more and get it done right day one.
There can be an awful white elephant though too if they're freezing in the winter and too hot in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, spring and autumn is the only time you probably get any great value out of them. But look, I mean, like I when it comes to designing a house, I'd always be for spending the most amount of money in the rooms that you use most. So any family living spaces, kitchen, dining, lounge, anything that connects to the garden, helps with lifestyle, or utility rooms, of course, which help just with the utility aspect of the function of the house. That's where I'd be spending most of my money, and I'm spending lease and bedrooms and that kind of thing, which are a lesser event.
We'll squeeze one more in. Noel has a red brick house. Currently, the cavity has a 50mm Styrofoam standard insulation. He wants to get the cavity filled. He's reluctant to use the pumped bead insulation because the moisture could travel across to the inside wall. Is there any product available in Ireland that would give me peace of mind?
I've used the pump bead loads of times, and we use them in new houses. But I've never had an issue with them, so I wouldn't have a concern with using pump beads. They came out about 15 years ago, and they were kind of coming and going a bit for a while. But it's a very recognised process. No, I wouldn't have a concern using it.
So you're not worried about that.
No.
Kieran, thanks so much for getting through so many of those questions. And tell you, we could keep going for another hour, but we'll have you back again. We'd love to talk to you once more about retrofitting and renovation. Kieran McCarthy, engineer and house builder and co-presenter of Cheap Irish Homes on RTE Television. And that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Our programme was produced by Rachel Graham. Kieran Dunn was our researcher. Our broadcast coordinator is Louise Kerr-Ross, and Liam Mullen was on sound. Now, we're back here tomorrow at 10, but right now, coming just up to midday, it's over to Louise Duffy.